Hello. Welcome to episode 89 of the Carrier's Edge podcast. I'm Mark Morrell.
And I'm Jane Jazrowy. Wasn't I supposed to open this one?
No, you do even numbers.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Here we are, perpetual hosts of the podcast.
Yes.
Doing our last podcast episode from the old studio before we move to the new facilities. Yes, we are moving at the end of this month, and we'll be packing down our studio right after this podcast. Studio such as it is, collection of boards and towels that make up Jane's vocal booth.
It is a wondrous thing. We should probably take a picture of it.
We have. We took pictures when we did an internal spotlight for staff on behind the scenes of a podcast and took pictures to show everybody the luxury that we
have
in.
A door and some foam and I'm trapped here and it's cold.
I know. It's cold. Things I won't miss.
And because we haven't got a really great setup, we're actually, we have doors. Mark is in a room and I'm outside the room by the stairs, which makes it seem like I'm...
You're not fully invited in.
Yeah, so we realized that we were bleeding onto each other, especially when I laugh, so we have to be separated by a door. So I'm peering at you through like the one paint, like they're French doors with the things in between, the cross hatches. And so I'm looking at you through the second from top left window.
Yeah, but you've never been allowed in the main studio, yes. You're always outside. You're like, you're not main cast. You're just a guest.
That's right. And well, it's because you have to handle the turning on and turning off things.
Yeah, I have to press two buttons.
This is a technical term for what you do. I can't see you. Like once you reach your hand out, then I don't know what you're doing.
I press the button to start recording. And then about every 10 minutes or so, I have to jiggle the mouse so it doesn't go to sleep.
But we are excited about our move, the big move, as we have started calling it, because we are moving from Newmarket, Ontario, which is about, I don't know, an hour, depending on traffic, north of Toronto. And
should be 20 minutes.
Yeah, but it's almost never 20 minutes anymore, ever. It might be 20 minutes from...
Top end, yeah.
Yeah, from Stouffville Road. But anyway, we are going to Victoria, Canada, BC, Canada. Yes. We are going to be living on the island.
Yes. Moving out to the island, going to the ocean.
That is correct.
Big event.
Yes. And we are driving out there and that will be an adventure.
Yes. So I don't know how we're going to do the next episode of our podcast because we'll be on the road for it. So it may be from some motel somewhere on the prairies. We'll see.
Yeah. And it may not be very good quality. So we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, we'll see. But that has been the generally, and what I've been doing over the last month or so is shredding paper and cleaning out the basement, which is where most of our life has been, has been stored for the last 20 years that we've been in this house.
Yeah, so big excitement.
It is.
And yes, coming close.
That doesn't mean that Ontario is going to see the last of us because we're going to be back here in June. We're going to be back here
like all 2 weeks
time.
After we get moved out there, we're back here for a staff meeting.
Yeah. And our kids live here. So we are not going to be far away.
No.
Except we are going to be far away.
We're not going to be gone for long, I guess, at any stretch.
Yeah. But you all probably don't want to hear about our move.
And you have been busy doing a lot of purging, and we talked about that on the last episode because you were just digging into it at the time. But
yes.
This week you have started to come back from all of that, and you took some time out and did a webinar.
I did.
On PowerPoint. So this I am...
Okay, first of all, I was amazed at how long I've actually been using PowerPoint.
Well, before you get to that... I've done this webinar on best practices in PowerPoint.
Right.
This was one of the original series of webinar topics that we put together. So like 2015, I first put this together.
And you've been doing the same one.
About every 9 months, yeah. I've been doing this since then. Still all works. And it's still all stuff that is relevant based on the horror show that I see at most presentations. But I couldn't be there because I was at another event that I'm going to talk about later. So I asked... you to step in.
Yes.
And being who you are not going to do mine. You're going to do your own and took it in a completely new direction. And I think a big chunk of that stuff didn't actually make it in or may not have all made it in. So I want to have a chance to go through it here. So, well, you were talking about some really interesting stuff when you were prepping it that I don't think all of that got into the content. So.
Oh, when I actually did the webinar.
Yes.
Oh, shoot.
Well, so now go ahead. You were saying you were surprised at how long you've been using PowerPoint.
I've been using PowerPoint for 40 years.
Really?
40 years. Yeah.
Did it exist in 83?
No, no, no. Oh, wait, then it's 30 years.
Right.
Are you sure? Wait.
40 years is 83. I don't think you were using it then.
93, 2003, 213, 223. Oh, you're right. Okay. So 30 years. Mm-hmm. It was launched in 1987, I think. Mm. And I didn't start using it until like the mid 90s, 93, 94, when I started working for SoftArc.
But it was 6 years old only.
Yeah. And it was pretty new.
Yeah.
It was, everything was really new. Photoshop was really new. PowerPoint, like Microsoft had Word and Excel, but they didn't have PowerPoint. They didn't make it. They made Word and Excel, but they didn't make mm-hmm. PowerPoint. So they bought the company. It was a company called Forethought that Apple actually gave them some funding because they really liked the idea of the presentation. And it was called Presenter at the very beginning. But when they got released, Microsoft kind of pounced on it and bought the company and therefore bought the product, which is what Microsoft does. And what a lot of companies do, if they have the money and they like a product or a competitor or something like Facebook and Twitter, well, not Twitter, but Facebook has done it. Other big tech companies have done that. Just buy a company so that they have the technology. Mm-hmm. And it looks in 1994, 95, when I first started using it, it looked like the interface looks different, but it's pretty much the same. It's the same. You can do the same things with PowerPoint then that you can do now. And what the most interesting thing that I kind of realized is that PowerPoint wants you to do things that are not good for presentations.
Shocker.
I know. It's so weird. It's presentation software, but they developed it. I mean, it was developed in the 90s or in the 80s.
Right.
In the 80s, we didn't know what online presentations were going to end up as. Mm. And what I think is really bizarre about PowerPoint is it really hasn't changed anything.
Mm.
And so the way that you build a presentation is pretty much exactly the same way. The only thing that PowerPoint has done is given you tools to do it faster.
And add more animation and crazy fonts.
Yeah, but you can do that faster now and you can add more garbage.
Mm.
Like there's just so much garbage that PowerPoint is like, hey, you want to add this? Hey, you want to add this? And it's like, no, I want a white screen. And they don't like that.
No.
They do not like you having white.
They want some crazy ass colors.
No, they absolutely. No, they don't want crazy. They want crazy colors. They want you to. I think. Okay, I'm going to step back. I think part of the problem is when PowerPoint first was launched, it was quite ugly.
Mm-hmm.
So when you created a presentation, and it is the same, you launched PowerPoint in 1994 and you launch it in 2023 and you open it and you get the same blank presentation. Not exactly the same. It's slightly, there's slight changes. The font was Times New Roman back then, and now it's Calibri. So thank God that they finally stopped using Times New Roman. Times New Roman was god-awful. So when you used PowerPoint back then, everybody pretty much knew that PowerPoint wasn't giving you anything, any help. You could create shapes, you could create colors, you could do all these things. But if you wanted something that was, you had to know how to design things. Like you had to have an eye. Like you couldn't just, you basically use clip art because that's all they provided for you. If you didn't have a graphic background, then clip art and screen beans and all that stuff was your, that's kind of what you had. Well, going back to 94, those were ugly. Like it wasn't nice. It wanted you to, the default colors were this really nasty blue and yellow and red, and it was very bright and it wasn't like, it was yucky. Now PowerPoint has much nicer colors. The default color is a nice blue. There's more options to insert things. There's a whole whack of things where you can design diagrams and things like that. But the problem is that it just wants to point you to here, put this color on here, put this design on here, do this, do this, do this. And the issue is that for a lot of your slides, you don't want that. I mean, that's not what your slide is about. And one of the things that you have to think about with PowerPoint is, what do you want to say?
Mm.
What exactly is it that you're saying? And my whole presentation was really kind of anti-bullet point, because bullet points are not helping you. They're not engaging your audience. They're basically, you've created your script. So the strength of PowerPoint is that it's easy for you to create a presentation. The end. That's the strength of PowerPoint. Doesn't help you be a better presenter. It helps you put things on a slide. And in 1994 and 2023, it really wants you to put bullets on those slides.
Yeah. Well, that's the default. It opens with a slide that's ready for bullets.
Yeah.
And bullets in the top left. So if you don't have a ton of bullets, if you only have a sparse amount of text, you've got this little block of content in the top left of the slide, and the rest is just sitting there empty.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, my go-to is a blank slide. I might use the title slide if I'm being lazy, but I don't like, you know, I don't like the fact that they force you into a subtitle. Like,
yeah.
You know, you have to go and rearrange these things. And really, you know, a blank slide is what you should be starting with. You should not be starting with bullets.
Yeah.
Because that just makes you think, oh, I have to, you know, I'll just create some bullets and then I'll do bullet, slide, and then everybody is asleep after 10 minutes and they're not engaged.
I saw one recently that I think was fabulous in its awfulness because the whole slide was filled with text and it was multicolored. It was blue and orange text alternating, and it was all caps. And it was so dense that it was like just a long statement. It wasn't bullet points. It was like a paragraph of text on the screen, all in caps and alternating colors. It was like this person shouting all of these statements at you. And it was so hard to read.
Did, when you read it, when you finally figured it out, did it add anything to the presentation?
No, it could have been two words.
Yeah. And this is the thing, is that people don't realize that you don't need to read things on a slide. The slide is there for graphic enhancement. Like, it's photos, pictures, screenshots, like, you know, you can use your words. The whole idea of someone talking is that they're going to be telling you a story or talking about something that they know about that you don't know about. And the graphic that is sitting behind you shouldn't be competing with what you're saying. It should be enhancing what you're saying. Oh my God, I wish I'd said this in the in the webinar, because that is pretty much what you want PowerPoint to do, or that's what you want your presentation or your graphic or your, you know, how you interact with people. So one of the things that I was doing is saying, this is how you can also interact with people. Mm-hmm. You don't need to just use bullet points. You can do all these other things.
I often tell people when I'm doing, or when I used to do that webinar, think about it like a newscaster. You're the presenter talking, and the newscaster is not going to have a slide up that's just a ton of bullet points or a ton of text. It's going to be an image. It might be B-roll footage, you know, in behind what they're saying. It might even just be a couple of words, but it is going to be very much underscoring what they're actually saying.
Yeah, I kind of said the same thing in a different way, where I was saying you don't have to. It's like a default. When people, you know, people speak or do a seminar or a webinar or whatever, everything, it's like the default is go to PowerPoint and fill it up with your notes.
Yeah.
And then present those notes as bullet points on a slide.
Well, that's also one of the first mistakes people make, is they start in PowerPoint.
Yeah, because PowerPoint is easy to use and it tells you this is what you should do, because this is how this is how you do presentations. But it's really good presentations often have no PowerPoint at all.
You said something when you were prepping it about how in your research you found that PowerPoint kind of forces you to do a linear presentation, where before PowerPoint presentations weren't linear the same way.
Yeah, PowerPoint, well, it's the bullet points, right? So you start your presentation and you do your, you know, you write your notes and they are bullet points on a PowerPoint slide. Before PowerPoint, where people, and it's funny because people talk about doing, using PowerPoint for meetings, and we never do. And I don't think that's a thing in trucking. But when you use PowerPoint for meetings, you kind of stifle discussion. Mm. You know, people, it just becomes wait for the bullet points to be over and then, you know, are there any questions? So the linear part of it is that everybody's just waiting for the bullet points to be over. And you don't say something and then have a discussion about it and then say something else and have a discussion about it. You just say, here's my list.
Mm.
And that linear, and I didn't say that because I really was hammering home that bullet points are terrible. And it's hard not to do bullet points. It really is. Like, it, you, when you do your notes, and I still think, you know, write your presentation outside of PowerPoint, and then that whole one third plan it and write it out and then put it in PowerPoint is like your finishing touch. That's kind of the two thirds, is just work on your slides. But you should already know what you're saying. bullet points are fine, but they're for you. Mm-hmm. They're not for your audience. So PowerPoint is doing things for you as the creator of the presentation. It's not helping your audience. Your job is to help the audience figure out what things need to, you know, or what they're expected to do or what they're expected to know. The other thing that I had as an example, a famous PowerPoint slide, and I didn't realize it was famous, but it is famous in some circles, that was apparently the cause of the Columbia disaster where it exploded on reentry.
Mm.
And it was because they did do tests on the components of the shuttle, but the test data was kind of, well, it's hard to know what the test data was looking at the slide. There's this one PowerPoint slide that talks about the results of some testing, some simulations. And the important parts are, the problem is that PowerPoint lets you indent your bullets.
Mm.
And so you indent and you're because you're doing like sub bullets and you're thinking sub bullets. This is part of this main idea and this is part of this main idea. But if you go into the sub bullets, then you get smaller text. And so as you're creating your thought process and you do it in PowerPoint, you do it in bullets because that's how you create your thought process. But as you know, and many people have heard me say, it's backwards.
Mm.
So you're doing your thought process and you come to your conclusion at the bottom of your slide in the smallest text.
Mm-hmm.
But is that what you want your audience to do? Like
yeah, it shouldn't be the least important thing.
No, your conclusion should be the top of your slide, the most important thing, because that is your point.
Mm-hmm.
Your conclusion is your point. You don't need to, you know, reveal it at the end, after you do a long explanation. You want to lead with your lead. And so if this particular PowerPoint slide hadn't started in that thought process, then they would have said, you know, these tiles are going to get destroyed if there's severe tile damage can occur. If that had been the title, then there may have been some discussion about more discussion about what was happening with those tiles and, you know, whatever the engineers were saying, and maybe Challenge or Columbia wouldn't have exploded.
Wow.
And so they talk about that and they talk about how awful this PowerPoint slide was. And in fact, the military started banning PowerPoint because it was just so filled with bullets, because all of these people creating presentations for meetings and briefings and stuff like that, they're just writing bullet points.
For themselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if the bullets are for you, why is it on the screen for the audience?
Well, this is exactly it. And coming back to what you were saying about the different colors in that PowerPoint slide,
mm-hmm.
I think that they were trying to do some design stuff that just went, it was just a non-starter. But, and I can see the idea, but nobody ever tells you, look, your slides are crap.
Well, the design would have been great if they had just boiled it down to like
two words.
Yeah, two words per bullet or something like that, or just very sparse stuff.
Oh, what was I going to say?
Color.
Oh, color. Shoot.
Insert cricket sounds here.
Yeah, sorry. I lost it. But there was something about, talking about the Columbia. Anyway.
I'm fascinated by that. So whoever made that slide is responsible for destroying a space shuttle and killing people.
I think
that's a legacy.
That was a group, I think.
Somebody made that slide.
Yeah, but at the same time,
bad slides can kill people.
It was Boeing and NASA. You think that these are all really super smart people. And what it really points out is that PowerPoint bullets are very sleep-inducing. Oh, and I also want to talk about hypnotizing chickens. And you don't want to, you can't pay attention to people's bullets. You can't. It's so boring.
Yeah.
It's just so boring.
Well, you just scan through them and then you're done.
Yeah, you've already read them. And, you know, by the time someone has gotten to point number three, and at one point I was trying, you know, this whole thing about animating each of the bullets as I go and things like that. That's just also garbage.
Yeah, I was at a presentation not that long ago where the deck was all bullets. And on one slide, I think they went down to the fourth level bullet. Like, third level bullet is a no-no. Like, there are specific cases where I've seen people do a second level and it can be useful if you're showing categories of things, but only if you got very little text on there. And like a third level, oh no, this one went beyond into the unknown, uncharted territory of the fourth bullet. Never go to the fourth level.
But the thing is PowerPoint helps you by resizing all your text.
Makes it easy. It's got a font and a bullet style for that fourth level. Yeah.
No.
Well, that's why the first rule of my version of this webinar, I said there's three guiding principles to follow. I think maybe it's not the first one, but one of them was Microsoft is not your friend. Mm-hmm. Microsoft will do the opposite of what makes a good presentation.
Because I don't think that Microsoft actually includes presenters in their design. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't talk to the people who are really, really good presenters, probably because the presenters would say, well, yeah, I don't use PowerPoint.
Yeah, I just use a blank slide and put a picture on it.
But for training, I think my thinking, and this is what a lot of people use it for, is Zoom meetings and training and stuff like that, is that making people take notes is a thing that will keep them engaged. If you don't give them the PowerPoint, then they won't go and do something else. Mm-hmm. You know, so when I did this PowerPoint, this thing about PowerPoint, I said, I'm not going to give you bullets for my agenda. I'm just going to tell you what they are right now. And if you want to know, you want to remember, then you'll write it down and then you'll know.
That process of writing it down. Yeah.
That process of writing it down apparently changes your brain a little bit so that it actually sticks in your memory. But so many times I go into a webinar, see that it's death by PowerPoint. And there's a reason that people say death by PowerPoint. I mean, it is bullets.
Yeah.
And then I tune out, and I often, like halfway through the presentation, I'm like, yeah, I'm not listening to this. I'm going to go and get the recording.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But if you are doing training, then that's not a great thing. You want to engage your audience. So you want to at least establish some sort of two-way communication with your audience if you're doing training. So I was trying to do that. I was trying to make people talk to me. And yeah, that's really tough on a webinar where everybody expects
people
to just...
People are conditioned. Since COVID, people have been conditioned to do webinars in particular ways because there's so many webinars now. Mm-hmm. Everybody just goes in, listens to them while they're doing something else, and sort of has them kind of in background listening for some interesting tidbit, not expecting a whole lot, not expecting to be engaged, not expecting to have to participate. And I think that's something that people have to understand when they're putting a session together, is what are the expectations of the audience? Now, doing a webinar is very different than doing a training session in classroom, where a lot of people use a PowerPoint. And there, you absolutely can keep people engaged. You expect them to be engaged and participating, but you have to give them something meaningful, and like something meaningful to grab onto, which is where the writing notes is good, because all of those people that need to be doing something with their hands in order to listen, it gives them something to do with their hands.
The other thing that I think is really good to keep people engaged is interviews. So one of the things that I was talking about is podcasts, and everybody listens to podcasts for information. Like that's a pretty common thing now, but podcasts don't have PowerPoint.
Yeah.
So how are you learning anything?
Yeah.
Like, how is this happening? And the just having a conversation can be a lot more engaging. Even though you're not participating in the conversation, you're listening to people talk to each other as a conversation, and you can ask questions if you want to. So I was kind of challenging people to, you know, well, what about, do this, or here's a poll, do a poll. At least do, you know, have a poll. And then, you know, you can do these things with Zoom. You can do this with Zoom.
Speaking of which, talk about what you did, because you did a weird thing that I didn't even know was possible.
I think it's a new feature in Zoom where you can actually put yourself as a virtual speaker in front of your slides.
Was it a plugin or something? Or
no, it's built in Zoom, and I've not seen it. Where you go and do your advanced sharing, where you can mm-hmm. do a part of the screen, it's share your size slides as a virtual background, and you upload your slides. So you have to, it kind of, you remove some of the features of PowerPoint, so there is a little bit of a, because there, it's just a image behind
you. So it's
you.
A trade-off there that you're sharing your screen.
Yeah. You're sharing your screen and you can flip through the slides, but you can't do anything interactive with your slides per se. So I showed that, but then I had to do a poll that I needed to be able to click on the slide. Like I needed to be able to click, and it's called Poll Everywhere. And I think it's a really cool little polling thing that I might use in staff meetings and stuff like that as well. But I couldn't have virtual slides and use that. So I was doing some finicky going back and forth between different slide presentations to make everything happen at once. So normally you would choose one or the other. You wouldn't be trying to flip back and forth. So I may have been overextending myself a little bit in that one. But I wanted to show different things that you can do. And that, you know, having your head in front of the slide, a bigger, and you can resize your head as well. That's really cool. The idea of doing the pulls. Now, Zoom pulls are okay, but they're not very, I couldn't do very much with it. So that's why I went to this other pulling tool that's freemium. So, you know, you can do some stuff with it. And then, you know, you can use short answer questions in Zoom now. So that's another thing that you can do on a Zoom meeting. The other thing that I was talking about in the webinar is, do you need a PowerPoint presentation? Do you need to be talking in front of a room, or do you need the slide at all? Mm-hmm. Like, is it a thing? So I found, and it's not hard to find crap on the internet. So I found a presentation that was actually from Ryder, and it was hours of service, and hours of service is pretty commonly done. So I found a slide. It was, I swear, it took me maybe 7 minutes to find this. And that was mostly waiting for things to load. And this slide had three bullets basically saying where hours of service came from and why they're important. And what was interesting is the second point was the most important one. And instead of just making it the first point, I don't know why they made it red. So they had three, and it wasn't like a style thing where it's like bullet one is black, bullet two is red, bullet three is black. It was this particular slide, the second bullet, which I could see was their major point. They did it second. And I was quite amazed by this. Like, why would you do that? And plus, the entire, it was why hours of service regulations. Well, that is something that you don't need to stand in front of a room and say with your PowerPoint slides. Mm-hmm. You don't need, like, everybody.
That's not a good use of time.
It's not. And as a matter of fact, the whole regulatory thing, all those regulations and how they work and blah, 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 that's online. Mm-hmm. You should not never be standing in front of a room saying, so here's what the hours of service regulations are for. And you have three or four types of duty status, depending on how you want to group them. And, you know, you have this many hours that you can do, and you have this many hours you have to take off. No, let that be online. You don't need to talk about that. That is just such a waste of your time. Even if you uploaded PowerPoint and made people go through that on their own, that's a better use of your time. Mm-hmm. And then when you want to talk about hours of service, talk about your company's use of hours of service. Like, talk about what your internal, the internal processes are. Like, what kinds of tricky things, what customers are going to give you a pain in the neck? And when should you go off duty as opposed to be on duty at a particular customer and blah, 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 blah. Like, that is a way better use of time. And drivers are going to be more engaged because they're going to be like, okay, this is how I do my job.
Yeah, this is what I need to know.
Yeah.
They're not going to be tuning out because they've heard the history of HOS 20 times already.
Yeah, and don't care.
Yeah.
Like, they really don't care. I mean, you have to, in a training, like for generic training, you kind of have to have some time dedicated to that. Mm-hmm. But you don't need to do it for orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Because people should have already taken the course.
Yeah, they should already be up to speed on that so you can focus on the things that matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Well, I wanted to have a recap of that webinar, and we've covered about half of your content, actually, or half of the time that you spent on that webinar, so that's good. So go check out the recording, everybody.
Yes, go check out the recording and see all the fancy things. There's also a handout, and I was talking about how handouts are, you know, if you have a lot of links and instructions and stuff like that, give people a handout.
Mm.
That's what I used to do all the time. And I have a whole bunch of links. There's a handout, and if you want it and can't find it, then you can ask support at carriersedge.com, and they can get it for you. But there's, you can do this virtual slide thing. You can do it in Teams, I believe. And actually, PowerPoint has a way that you can put yourself in the camera on top of your slides. So if you're sharing your slides, you can be in your slides. So they call it, I can't remember what they call it, but it's in the document. So there are like a whole bunch of people are doing the same thing.
Cool. All right. Excellent.
Well, your information about what you should put on a slide is also really good. But I think if my main point is minimal. Like, just don't. If you're going to use, oh, I also was saying, like, if you're going to use a picture, please don't. I'm not saying don't, please don't use a picture, but please don't stretch it. The distortion.
Yeah.
The distortion. Considering we all have these amazing tools in our cell phones, a phone can take an amazing, mm-hmm. Much better picture than people could do with decent cameras 15 years ago. Like, the resolution that you can get on a picture that you can just upload to PowerPoint and make your presentation just so much nicer. People like looking at pictures. Do put a picture on a slide if you want to show something. Okay, I'll stop talking about it now.
Yeah, we should probably move on to some other things, but I don't want. You got me thinking, you know, you're saying about all of these things that people want to do on PowerPoint, and, you know, your summary is just don't. So it's like the anti-Nike, just don't. Whatever you're thinking about content or crazy amount of text or clip art or whatever garbage, just don't.
You know, create your presentation, put all your bullets there, but don't show them to anybody. Yeah, it's notes.
Mm-hmm.
It's your notes. That's what bullet points are your notes. So if you want to have them, I would do them in Word because it's better. And then you can print them out and you can organize them a little bit better. But think about your first five bullets that you really wanted to put on that slide and think, okay, well, what can I do as one thing that people can look at that will get the same thing across? And if you're in front of a room and you're teaching hours of service, then get people to fill out a logbook. They don't need to see PowerPoint on how to fill out a logbook. You got logbooks right there. You got your ELDs right there.
Like, do it.
Use that. Or if you want to talk about winter driving and you have a simulator, then what are you doing PowerPoint for? Or have access to something where people can practice, or backing. That's another thing where people have all these PowerPoint slides of how to do backing when really you need a video. And speaking of video, I was going to tell you about the name of the PowerPoint present, or the name of the webinar is PowerPoint, Inside PowerPoint, or How to Hypnotize a Chicken.
Yes. Tell us about the hypnotizing chickens and we'll move on.
Okay, this goes back to the military thing. And General Mattis, who had a lot of fame in the Trump administration because they were stuff going on there. But anyway, in 2010, he said famously that PowerPoint makes you stupid.
Mm.
And it was all about these bullets. And then he said that he went on later because people asked him about it. And he said, I can't remember what exactly he said, but he basically, it was down along the line of the bullets are, you know, the bullets don't tell you anything. Everybody's asleep at the switch until, you know, you get to the, you know, any questions slide. And the only thing that is good for is for when you want to say nothing to the press. So when the media comes calling and has all of these questions for whatever military thing that they want to try and get a scoop on, then you just bamboozle them with bullet points and you wait for the, you know, the any question slide at the end, and they never have them. And he said, and it's just like hypnotizing chickens.
Mm.
And then I was like, hey, wait a minute. Can you hypnotize a chicken? So I had to look that up. And you can, and I have a video of it where you hold a chicken and draw a line from its, like, you know, relatively around from where its beak is, and make the chicken watch it and draw a line in the sand or the dirt going out, and it will hypnotize them. You have to sometimes try it a couple of times.
How do you know it's hypnotized? Is it like fall down when you let go or something, fall asleep?
Well, you should be holding on to it,
right.
But it goes very still. Mm. And then if you put it down gently on the ground, it just stays there. And apparently it just sits there for like a few minutes. I don't know how long it lasts, but that's how you do it. And I guess General Mattis, you know, and I can totally see it, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point, you know, the line of bullet points, and the news people are just like, yeah, huh?
I'm just thinking about the person who thought, can we hypnotize a chicken? Let's try a bunch of things. How many did they have to try before they got to, let's draw a line in the sand? Like,
that was an accident. I'm positive that was an accident. There's no, you know, I can see.
Somebody trying to get their chicken to walk in a straight line and drew it on the line. Draw it, here's where I want you to go. And then the chicken is just catatonic after.
Yeah, I think it seems like something that people have known forever.
Mm.
And it's only people who are non agricultural people that like us who are like, whoa, I've never heard of that. But that's the other thing. And you tell me that I have a special gift for this, is that, you know, that's, people call that going down a rabbit hole.
You're definitely down a rabbit hole if you're talking about hypnotizing chickens in a webinar about PowerPoint.
But it relates.
I see how you got there, but on the surface, they seem to have no connection.
But I think, hopefully, if people remember nothing else from that webinar, they remember the hypnotizing chickens. Because, and they will think twice before bullet, 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 bullet.
Yeah. Don't hypnotize chickens.
Don't hypnotize the chickens.
Yes.
You know, don't hypnotize your class. Don't hypnotize your, if you have to do a presentation, try and think of what you want to say and then have a creative way of saying it.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of weird sound bites coming out of this episode. Hypnotizing chickens, just don't.
You know what? If when I go and look at PowerPoint presentations and the people who are speakers and who do this for a living, they do the same thing. They say the same stuff. They do not put bullet points on their slides.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's a very, you know, unless they're doing something specific. But, you know, there's a reason for it. It's not just bullets. But, you know, I looked up a couple of them and it's like, yeah, don't use bullet, but like, don't use the PowerPoint default, because Microsoft is not good at that. Like, Microsoft doesn't know how to use its own tools. It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Their presentations are awful. That was my examples when I was doing it. I had an example of Bill Gates doing a presentation and I felt bad for him because it was awful what was behind him on the screen. And you compare that to the Steve Jobs style where it's one nice color and maybe one image, or it might be two words, or it might just be nothing.
Yeah, Steve Jobs was, I mean, his presentations were all about him. It was, you know, I'm in control of this information and I'm going to give it to you. And that's what a really strong presenter does, is takes control of the information and says, okay, I'm going to give this to you and you're going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
And when people are unhappy about being in that position or are awkward and they don't know what they're saying and they feel like they need a script, that's when you get that. And Bill Gates hated being front mm-hmm. and center, and he should have just gave it to somebody else mm-hmm. and who did like it, because nobody's engaged by someone who's feeling uncomfortable in front of a room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unless you learn how to be in front of a room, which is what you did.
You fumble through some things and find something that works and then stick with that
mm-hmm.
every single time. Yes. And my better solution is just to have you do it.
Well, there's that, but you at the beginning, I couldn't, and you did, and you know, now you're a really good presenter.
Yeah.
You may not like it, but you do it really well.
Thank you.
it's not your wheelhouse, but
yeah.
You know, like you've learned to do, like both of us have learned to do a lot of things that we really didn't want to ever do, but, you know, had to do.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's run a small business or created a company or created any kind of organization knows that you're chief cook and bottle washer, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep. So we don't have a lot of time left, but I will talk very quickly about one other thing that I never thought I would be doing that I do a fair bit now, and that is going to trade shows.
So. Also something that is not really, you know, what you thought, oh, yay, I want to go to trade shows.
Well,
when
everybody
I grow up.
Thinks, oh, trade shows are great. Oh, business travel is great.
Until you do 15. Yeah.
Yes. And once again, your rule was proven correct, which is, I think it is getting to the point where it is being established as Jane's Law that doesn't matter where you're going, it's a whole day to get there. Doesn't matter how long the flight is, it's an entire day. There's no such thing as fly somewhere in the morning, like do a presentation and fly somewhere back or something, like, you know. No, the flight is delayed. You get crap at the airport to deal with. There's going to be other headaches. It's a day on either end. So I went to Orlando for the National Private Truck Council's annual convention or conference or whatever they call it, conference and exhibition, their big annual event. First time there. And of course, even though it's a 3-hour flight, it was 8 or 9 hours occupied because, of course, it was delayed. And then there's, you know, other hassles that come along the way. God forbid you check a bag because that adds another 45 minutes
mm-hmm.
onto it. So the event itself was actually quite good. I got the final attendance list today. It looks like just under 1,300 people registered. I don't think there was that many there.
It didn't sound like there was that many there.
It's hard to know in the exhibit hall. It's a huge exhibit hall. So next to ATA's event, it's the biggest exhibit hall I think I've seen in the industry. Yeah, so very big that way. Less on the education sessions, but they did have some really good sessions. And there's a couple of things.
There's some bad PowerPoint.
Some of them were bad. I just said they had a couple of good. There was one of them that at the end of it, somebody asked me what I thought. And I said, that was terrible. And they're like, yeah, that was one of the worst ones I've been to in ages. So there was some that weren't great. But there was some that were actually really good. And one thing that they do that I really like is nobody, when they're presenting, is allowed to mention any vendor names. You talk about, you can talk about your telematics provider, but you can't say the name. So you talk about your dash cam provider or any of the other things, which is a really cool way of kind of leveling the playing field. Like nobody's really getting plugs. Nobody is uneven that way. So I really like that.
Yeah, I know other associations have tried to do that, and it basically they don't enforce it very well. So no.
These guys enforce it. They start on time, they end on time, they enforce
That's nice.
Their rules. And another kind of two other things that were sort of distinct about them. One, media aren't allowed into any of the breakout sessions, which is kind of weird. Usually at these events, you have the media there, and that's part of the value of the whole thing is that the media is there and you get stories afterwards, but media aren't allowed. So I think it's because all the presenters are the private fleet representatives. And so many of those private fleets are essentially giant public companies. You can't have people in the media saying all kinds of stuff that could be a problem
right.
for the company later on. So so that was different. And they also have no vendors doing presentations. It's all the fleet members. I don't know that that's really the best idea. I can see why they do it. The problem is with these breakout sessions when vendors do it.
It's a sales.
The vendors don't send somebody who's a real expert on that subject matter. They send a sales or a marketing person who just can't stop themselves from pitching endlessly. And if the industry would figure out how to not always be pitching every single moment that their mouth is moving, it would be way better. So I understand why these guys have gone the direction they have and said no vendors speaking, only fleet members, because they don't want the pitch. And then you don't mention a vendor name. It's very generic. It is just focused on the content, whatever best practices they're talking about, whatever ideas they're sharing. And there are some really good ones. There's a good session on change management, which that's not the subject that you're seeing very often.
No, that is an unusual subject.
Yeah. Two fairly large fleets talking about how they did communication and did change management around some implementations and had a good horror story about the thing they did wrong. Yeah, which was great. Those things are always really interesting. The failures are just as entertaining and sometimes more more insightful than the victories. So that was good. Another good session on reducing driver in-cab risk scores, which is really about how to use the telematics and camera devices to improve driver performance. And it's all about coaching. It was interesting to see that all of the fleets there are using cameras purely for, well, certainly to cover their butts in court cases for exoneration. But outside of that, almost exclusively for coaching. Nobody's using it for punitive measures. So, and somebody in the audience who was a vendor pointed out that on the for-hire side, it is definitely being used for punitive things. But on the private fleet sides, nobody's really
Who's
using
it. Who's the vendor?
It was Platform Science.
Oh, interesting.
Who were there. Who were talking about it on the for-hire side. They're seeing people doing more punitive stuff coming out of the camera, which I thought was an interesting subject that I'd like to dig into.
Well, in best fleets, you see a lot of the fleets using it. Well, everybody's using it for coaching, and I've already talked about how there's like a disconnect between what they're doing for online training and what they're doing for coaching, and there's no connection at all. But punitive, I think people don't want to say they use it for punitive, although they do talk about if there's cell phone usage, then they'll...
Yeah, and I wonder... I think it might be worth asking the question or digging into it a little bit more, but I know that there are definitely camera and telematics... data points that are used in bonus calculation. So you could see that potentially being considered as a punitive where everybody starts with the maximum and then all of your bad events knock you down on your bonus. So you get less of it. That's sort of punitive.
And do private fleets do the same thing? Do you use those same bonuses or do they, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, there, a lot of them were talking about risk scores and lower score being better and bonusing based on the lower score. So it's not that different.
I think it might just be the way they're talking about it.
It might be. So I'm curious to explore it, but I thought it was interesting.
And I don't, my suspicion is that everybody's kind of using it the same way.
Possibly, yeah.
And that there are some fleets who are doing it, well, it depends on what they mean by punitive. Because if you go off the road, or if you have a hard break and then the camera catches it, and then, you know, someone calls the driver and talks about it and sees what the situation is, or they have a bunch of hard breaking things, then are you going to say, hey, you, why are you hard breaking? Stop doing that. You're going to lose your bonus. Or
no, it was actually, now that we're talking about it, it was in the context of distraction. And for higher fleets definitely are doing punitive things in terms of distraction. You know, 4 distracted events or whatever, 5 distracted events, and you get punished, or you potentially get disciplined, or you get terminated. And the private fleets really talked primarily about coaching. You know, coaching around that. It, I think, is still, there's still a very good chance that they're all doing the same thing. And this was just somebody
who happened to be more in the coaching,
or somebody who was just pumping the tires of the private fleets that he's trying to sell to.
Or the fleets actually do have punitive
and they just
measures
didn't talk about
that
it.
They didn't talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was an interesting event to go to. Very different schedule, very different flow of things. You know, you get used to how conventions work. So many of them are scheduled roughly the same.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because you had lunch at 11 every day.
Their big thing is luncheons every day. There's no...
At 11.
No events in the evening, but yeah, luncheon that starts at 11, and like 11:45, they start the lunch program, sort of the speaker program, which is largely awards and sort of summaries and that kind of stuff. But my favorite part of it was their booth selection process. Most events... it's just kind of a free form and it's open at a certain time. So at TCA, they have like a magic day at noon Eastern time. Everybody gets the floor plan and the booths are first come, first serve. ATA, when you go to the event, at MCE, there you can just wander up at any designated time. And like they've got a couple of 2-hour blocks where you can just go up and see the floor plan and pick your booth for next year at that point. But NPTC does it very differently. They have a draft, and your draft pick, your order of draft pick is based on basically how much money you've spent with them and how long you've been a member. So the longer you're there and the more money you spend, the higher you go up in the rankings, which means you get to pick sooner. So it was quite fun. We didn't have a great ranking because we haven't been a member for very long.
It's like 6 months.
No, we've been a member for about 1.5 years, and this is only the second event that we have been to. So I thought it was a lot of fun just watching everybody sort of shout out their booth numbers that they want when their name is called. There's somebody at the front who calls out your name and you shout out the booth number. And if you're not sure if it's available, you can say, is this one still available? And then they'll, you know, have a bit of back and forth. But there's also a bunch of, can we take this booth and split it? Or can we put a bunch of these together and turn it into this? And they will look at it and see if they can do it. And yeah, and the Freeman guy was there with his master floor planned as well. And he would clarify what the new booth number would be when you're chopping them up or combining them. So you actually get a very basic default floor plan as a starting point, but it changes significantly throughout that draft. And so by the end of it, it was looking quite different. So it was kind of cool to watch how that floor plan evolves and to also see where everybody's going to be. The advantage, I suppose, of being lower on the rankings is you get to see everybody else.
Get the good spots, yeah.
Well, you can see ahead of time where everybody's going to be. So I thought that was a lot of fun. It was a very good hour. So that was this week. I've got a week off, and then I'm off to Boston for the National Tank Truck Council.
Cool.
Yes, 2 very similar sounding associations, NPTC and NTTC.
Yes, I'm having problems.
Oh, marketing is so confused. Which one is like? So finally, I just said private fleets and tankers, and you know, Orlando and Boston. So I'm looking forward to that. That's also a new convention for us, new association that we joined about 1 year ago. So going to my first event.
You and Selassie?
Yeah, we're spending the May long weekend in Boston, which not so terrible.
Not terrible. No.
It's at the Encore.
You haven't been in Boston for...
I haven't been in Boston for years, so it'll be cool.
And Boston is a great place.
I do love the Wynn and Encore. You know, those are great hotels. Yeah. I'm a bit burned out on Vegas, but this will be a nice way to go to a decent hotel that's not in Vegas. So
cool.
I think we can wrap it up there.
Yeah.
After our lengthy discussion of PowerPoint and short summary of Private Fleet's conference, that's a good time to end it. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Have a good day.